Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of December 13th. And we're pleased to have with us today the Editor-in-Chief of America, Father Drew Christensen. Welcome, Drew.
Thank you, Tim. It's good to be here with you and our listeners and readers.
Well, Father Drew, we're going to hear to talk about today an article you wrote in the current issue called On the Slope with Teilhard, which is about the French paleontologist, Jesuit philosopher, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. Maybe you can introduce him to our listeners.
Pierre Teilhard de Chardin was a famous Jesuit geologist and paleontologist who was known for his intellectual experiments and adventures, I suppose, and eventually as a philosopher of evolution and a spiritual writer. He spent much of his life in the field, in China and in Africa. He was a great attraction to intellectuals in France because of the innovation in his thinking and his spirited way of thinking about things. And for that reason, he was often kind of sent off on these expeditions to get him out of Paris and away from influencing the youth and the intellectual class with what were taken at that time to be unorthodox ways of thinking. I came upon him when his works first began to be translated in English when I was a novice in the early 1960s, and his book, The Divine Milieu, became kind of a favorite of mine, probably one of my top five books in terms of my intellectual influence and shaping certainly my spiritual life. But this particular essay I've written came about because of the my participation in the United Methodist Catholic Dialogue, where our theme for the present round of discussions is creation, Eucharist, and ecology. And a couple of years ago, when we were looking ahead to what we needed to complete our exercise, I said, a Catholic contribution would be incomplete unless we had a contribution about Teilhard's Mass on the World. Mass on the World was a prayer he wrote, first wrote, because he rewrote it many times and formulated it informally in practice when he was on the road. But he wrote it when he was in Ordos Desert in China, north central China, and didn't have the elements of the Mass to use, didn't have the bread and wine. And so he offers up all creation to God there and prays that it be suffused with the Spirit. The members of the dialogue agreed that they needed a paper on that topic, and of course, having suggested it, though not being any Teilhard expert, I was asked to prepare a paper on that topic, which I did. And this particular essay grew out of that longer paper. This past summer, I was the chaplain for the Star Island Conference of the Institute for Science in an Age of, I'm sorry, Religion in an Age of Science, up on the New Hampshire coast, and I wanted to give at least one lecture on Teilhard, and I thought there was a segment that I had done in the paper on the Mass in the World that was particularly used to scientists, and that was the section that dealt with another of Teilhard's prayer, the Hymn to Matter. It's a very unusual prayer, very striking, but I thought very useful for scientists because it suggests that their way of knowing is a way to spiritual growth, and that contrasted, I think, with the way in which most Jesuit theologians have thought about spiritual growth and theology in the 20th century, where they've been very much involved in what's called transcendental Thomism, that is kind of the fundamental reach of the mind to God beyond particular things, whereas Teilhard's approach is, no, you have to encounter physical reality, you have to have you have to put in your hard work to understand it, to grasp what's going on there, and it'll break your mental categories. It will force you to reformulate things. It'll help you give up old orthodoxies and imagine what really may be at work. And it's in that work that the spirit and the spiritual life arise. So it's a very different approach. And I'm happy to report that it was well received by the scientists, that they really felt this was a piece that spoke to them about their lives and their way of knowing. But I think it's useful for all of us. And I compare it at one point to another French philosopher's essay, and that's Simone Weil, who has an essay called Reflections on the Right Use of School Studies, where she says, studying, and by what she meant, applying the mind to solve a problem, whether it's in geometry or in translation of Greek, is a preparation for getting the mind to attend to God. And that certainly is a major theme, I think, with Teilhard too, that scientific research, study in that sense, with its complicated needs for experimentation, for retesting, and for verification by other people, replication of experiments, and so on and so forth, or in his case, replication of the reading of paleontological evidence. All of that is necessary for the mind to really grow, and as it grows, to understand the vastness and complexity of the universe, and so appreciate the glory of God.
Well, you mentioned the Hymn to Matter. You reprinted here in your essay. It's short. Perhaps you could just read it for our listeners.
Here are just a few lines from his Hymn to Matter. You who batter us and then dress our wounds, you who resist us and yield to us, you who wreck and build, you who shackle and liberate, it is you, matter, that I bless.
What struck me about, one of the things that struck me about your essay is that, as you know, Teilhard's theology, his philosophy, it grew out of his everyday scientific work. And one of the things he was very good at was he had a good eye for rocks. Maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, paleontology and geology require a lot of field work, and being able to recognize the differences in the strata or the composition of rock comes hard. But Teilhard seemed to be natural for identifying peculiarities and differences and subtleties, and his colleagues really commented on kind of his natural sense to be able to see these subtleties and grasp their implications too. And so his mind was very active in that respect. But it was his fascination with rocks as a boy that led to his thirst for God. Well, he came from a very religious family, but he collected hard things. He collected rocks, and he collected broken iron bolts that he found as he walked and strolled the countryside. And iron, he said, was the hardest thing he knew. And then this began to discover that iron rusted, and that rusted items broke, and so he was disillusioned. And he called these things, because he was so fascinated by them, his childhood idols. It was then that he began to long for something that was lasting and perduring and permanently reliable, and something that, while particular, was also universal. And so, that's the way he described the beginnings of his longing for God and the beginning of his mystical quest.
In your essay, you kind of take this a step further and suggesting that perhaps, I guess there's a lot of philosophy and theology out there spirituality that would say that the material world is kind of an obstacle to the spirit. But you're pointing out here that in many ways, matter can and serve as a kind of force that can help us move forward towards God.
Well, traditionally, spirituality was divided into two approaches. One was asceticism and one was mysticism. And everyone likes mysticism because it frequently is positive, although you do have the dark night and all those, the purgative way and so on. But nonetheless, mysticism, because it implies union, is taken to be affirmative, or asceticism is taken to be a practice that tries to discipline the body. In the history of the church, a lot of things have been done to discipline the body, to make it penance for sin, but also in trying to make the body more attentive to the movements of grace, to make it more attentive to or prone to give itself over to God in prayer. And so there's fasting, for instance, would be a discipline that would try to cleanse the body of not just the toxic emotions, but also toxic imaginations and other things that develop, and prepare us to listen to God. Well, for Teilhard, the work of research is that way, but what's different about Teilhard is that there's a positive gain in the knowledge that you're having. It's not that you're getting things out of the way, but you're getting imperfect understandings of things for a better understanding of things. And in doing so, you understand more the beauty and the complexity of the creation, and the beauty and complexity in unity of the Creator. And so the discipline of doing science and other disciplines in our lives can be the same way. Towards the conclusion of the essay, I take some lines from where he compares matter to a mountainside and says matter is kind of the slope on which we're ascending to God, but it's like a foothold. I mean, it holds you up, but you can easily, you know, fall down. His the major point he wants to make is in a spiritual life we must go up. That if we're not going up, we're gonna just don't stand still. If you're not moving ahead, like a free climber, I'd say, on a cliff, you're going to be descending. So you better keep moving forward. And he wants to say that whatever it is in life that provides resistance to us can be a way forward. So it could be that it's trying to do justice, whether in a law court or in defense of human rights, there's going to be resistance, but that resistance becomes a way for us to not only purify ourselves, but help to the world better to grasp the justice that God wants for the world. There's a positive development that results out of the asceticism, not just our purification for God, but our better grasp of an appreciation of what God wants for the world, and a better appreciation of, and an actual realization of that to some extent.
You mentioned earlier that Teilhard was a somewhat controversial figure in his lifetime, and in fact, as we were talking earlier, he died in this country and is buried in New York at the old St. Andrews, partially because he was not wanted in France. What was it about that was so controversial about his work?
Well, it's that he was conceiving of theology and of spirituality in ways that were not conventional. They weren't traditional. For one, he's proposing that there is sanctification in this case in the active life, and not just in kind of primarily in monasteries and in the model of retreat houses and church devotions and so on, but actually in the secular activities we take on. I think it's probably the most revolutionary thing he had to say. Also, he had a Christology that saw the cosmic Christ as kind of the object of our devotion. The cosmic Christ being not just the Jesus of history or even the resurrected Jesus, but the resurrected Jesus joined to the whole church in history, and the whole church in history being the place where all creation comes to its fulfillment and its purification and eventually glorification. And I think there was a lot of resistance to kind of seeing this go on. In fact, both Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict, after the council, in rejecting kind of the eschatology, or being critical at least of the eschatology of the council, felt it to put too much emphasis on this cosmic Christ Christology and looking to the fulfillment of humanity in history. But then, halfway through his ministry, John Paul kind of accepted it, integrated it into his social teaching. And Benedict has done the same and put it into his Eucharistic devotion too, talking only a couple of years ago at a Vespers service about the importance of Teilhard's vision of the host as being an offering of the whole world that the church makes to God, which, and talking about Teilhard's cosmic vision with a great deal of appreciation. So there was resistance. It's resistance that's now been overcome even at the heart of the church and at the top, very top of the church.
Well, Teilhard is somebody when we publish an article or hopefully for this podcast too, there's a lot of interest. There are people out there who are real devotees. Is there something that perhaps the current reader, the contemporary spiritual seeker could find in his theology that is particularly worthwhile?
Well, I think one of the things that seekers will find is a visionary who at the same time is very demanding. I think part of contemporary culture of spiritual seeking is that we seek to, we also want, as we're seeking to avoid commitment, to avoid being forced into a cage with demands are made of us. And Teilhard makes it clear, even in talking about matter, that there's no spiritual growth unless there's change in ourselves and demands are being made upon ourselves. And there's resistance, both in this case by what we're studying or by other social groups or by our own human nature. And so he wants to talk about the purification of activities and of passivities in our lives. And I think that's a real challenge to the kind of loose understanding of spiritual seeking we have today.
And as an introductory text, is the divine milieu, is that where to start?
I think myself that the divine milieu is the place to start. The other place might be to the essays in Hymn of the Universe, in which the first entry is Mass on the World.
Okay, well, Father Drew Christensen, we want to thank you for taking time with us, and we want to recommend this article in the December 13th issue.
Thank you, Tim. And prayerful Advent and a blessed Christmas to all our listeners.
Thank you again for joining us for this week's podcast. Reminder to go online, where we have a series of Advent video reflections featuring, among others, Father Drew Christensen. There's also a review this week of the film The King's Speech by Harry Forbes, as well as an archive article from the theologian Nicholas Lash on a meeting of theologians in Europe back in 1992. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.